Hey everyone, we have another special episode from RTX 2019, and this time we're talking with Brennan Lee Mulligan and Allie Beardsley from Dimension 20, College Humor's Dungeons & Dragons campaign web series available on their streaming service Dropout. So take a listen and excuse the background noise. Y'all could just say your names and how you would like to be referenced.
Sure. Brennan Lee Mulligan, creator of Dimension 20, College Humor cast member, he, him pronouns.
Awesome.
Cool. And I'm Allie Beardsley, partaker in Dimension 20, cast member, and I use they, them.
Awesome. Cool. Okay, well, let's jump right into it, because I need to hear about how y'all got into D&D.
I got into D&D purely from Brennan. Brennan, how did you get into D&D?
I've been playing D&D since I was 10 years old. So for the past 21 years, I've been playing this game. It's a damn hoot. I got into it because I was a big old dork to begin with, and my mom was like, hey, like, this game I think would be something you'd really like. She was a comic book writer, so she was like in nerdy spaces.
That is amazing.
Elaine Lee, look her up. Starstruck. But she very correctly guessed that I would like this game. I liked it so much that I played it nonstop for my entire life. So, that's how I got into D&D.
Yeah, it was truly, I had always liked D&D, but I grew up so religious, and my mom was really afraid of the game. I think that there's a lot of people in that world who think it's like the devil,
yes.
Or, you know.
Yep.
And so I was never able to play, but I've always been super into fantasy and, you know, tabletop games for sure. And then when I met Brennan, he was like, hey, we're going to start a D&D show. Would you be interested? And I was like, definitely. So I just had to learn, like, on the fly.
So Allie's first time playing D&D was on camera.
Was episode one.
Of
Fantasy High, yeah.
Okay.
We had talked a couple times about... I think we had one session zero where
yes,
you played, and then other than that, the cameras rolled and we were going.
Yeah, one quick session where we were kind of like drawing stuff on a paper. I remember as like the map.
It was nothing like
D20 at all.
Exactly.
Very home game.
Very recognizable as a home game. And then we were in the dome.
Yep.
What was the hardest thing when you started playing?
Well, okay, so I chose. I came into it with ideas for characters. Like I was like, I want to do a church camp girl. I want to do like a tie-dye shirt wearing like church camp girl who's figuring out what like God means to her. And Brennan was like, great. Paladin? And I was like, never heard that word before. So Brennan fully helped me like bring my idea and bring it into the space of D&D. So for me, the hardest part was being the paladin of the campaign.
Well, it was like we had paladin at first and then we decided cleric.
Oh yeah, you're right.
We did paladin first. It was one of those things where, because I was trying to soften the blow for a new player entering D&D for the first time. Also because we do milestone leveling up after every combat episode. So the game, you don't even get the same amount of time to sit with your abilities as a player because you're leveling up so fast on Dimension 20. So there's an element of, we did paladin first just to lessen spellcasting. But the more Allie talked about the character, it became more and more clear that it was like, this is a cleric. Like, because I was like, so, you know, does Kristen fight with like a sword and shield? And you know, Allie was like, I think just like a staff and casting spells. And I was like, fuck. Wait, I don't know if I can curse.
You can curse. Feel free.
But not because I didn't want Allie to play a cleric, because I knew that being a primary spellcaster is a lot of work for a new player.
Yes, that was the hardest part for sure. Was being the healer and the spellcaster. It was like, okay, I had all these cards, like, help.
I would say whether it's a tabletop or an MMORPG, healers are always the hardest role.
True champions, the unsung heroes.
Exactly.
Which worked out great because rolling has been insane for me. It's always like zero, or it's either 1 or 20 on stuff. So it's either like I'm really hurting the party, or I like come through at the last minute, you know.
Oh, I feel it. I play an orc barbarian, or half orc barbarian, but I'm a hyper aggressive orc barbarian.
Yeah.
So I may have hurt my party a few times with some critical fingers.
Just starting some shit that you can't then dig them out of.
Yeah,
for sure.
So I do want to ask too. So one of the things that's always been hard for me playing D&D is getting into my character, like actually having to act out. Like my DM would always make me orc roar whenever I would berserk, and it's so hard to like kind of get over that. Like how do you all do that?
Allie and I are two of the most deeply shameless people.
Absolutely. I would agree. We are veteran improvisers, meaning we get on stage once a week and bark like a dog. Is that an ATM?
Yeah, exactly. I think I remember that scene. No, it's very true. So what I would recommend is everyone's D&D game is different, and there's no one right way to play D&D. But if you're watching a show like Dimension 20 and you're interested in making a more theatrical, performative table in your home game, I think one of the things that cannot go understated is the importance of improv classes and improv training in myself and the experience of the other players at the table, which is not to say that you need to be a great performer to play that way. Because it's not about, like, being a great performer has to do with, like, you know, stage presence and da-da-da-da. This is not an external thing. This is just internal. You getting comfy with being characters and doing voices yourself. So for even those reasons, I think improv classes can be really helpful. We both studied at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, which is an incredible improv school. And a lot of it is not about, you know, I would never say to someone for their own home game, like, put pressure on yourself to be funny.
Yeah.
That's not what it's about. It's about getting comfortable sinking into the character to the point where you, when you're speaking in their voice, whether you're doing an accent or whether you're doing a character voice or whether you're doing whatever, even if you're just speaking as yourself, you're still locked into who that character is and you're feeling comfortable in that new role.
Okay. That's really good to know.
Yeah.
So I also want to know too, on the DMing side, you've said you've played for 21 years, which is amazing. Because I know I've known some people who've played for a really long time but didn't want, who have never DM'd. What made you think, or yes, how do I say that? Why DMing? Because I know it's hard. There's so much pressure on a DM.
Wanted to play and nobody else wanted to DM. Because I feel like the classics. I was very excited to DM when I was little. I started DMing again when I was 10 years old, which is like, that's the confidence of a 10-year-old. Like, I got in. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, so it is the confidence of a 10-year-old.
Yeah, I'm like, I'll run this game.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
I think if I had waited a couple more years, you know, puberty would have set in and I would have been like, I don't want to do this. But when you're 10, you're like, nothing can stop me, I'm invincible. And so I started DMing the game. The first day I ever DM'd a game, I was 10 years old, all my little friends. It was a nightmare. My adventure was very bad and not fun, and my friends were also mean about it and also weren't that great themselves. No offense to any of my friends listening to this podcast right now. I think the issue is basically at the end of the day, I would turn to my mom and she was like, how'd that go? And I was like, today was the most stressful day of my life. As a 10-year-old being like stressed. And then she was like, oh, I'm so sorry, sweetie. And I was like, okay, we need to schedule next week's. There was something about it where it was like as bad as I was at it when I first started. I knew it was like a weird thing where it's like, it's not about enjoying it. It's like, oh, this is what I do. I do this now. And then eventually it started being easier and everyone got better and it got fun. But I think that often a DM is an act of, I don't mean to make it this intense, but there's a little bit of an act of service. You know, there's a group of friends that want to play. And a lot of times it's someone is like, okay, I will do it. And that's beautiful. That's a cool thing. But I think if you're listening to this and you're on the fence about whether or not you should DM, you absolutely should. There's so many people that want to play that don't have anyone to run a game for them. Yeah. And if you have the inclination, you should go for it.
Have you ever thought about DMing?
No, I don't think I'm there yet. But I would. I'm not opposed to it in any way. I think it would be really fun to set up like a side mini campaign or something. Definitely not a full one yet, but yeah.
I love it.
So what have been some of your favorite moments from season 1 and 2 of Dimension 20? Whether it was to act, to watch other people do, or even if it was like a moment where you had to just shift the campaign.
Oh, I'll tell you what. Well, Beardsley over here drops narrative Nat 20. Like it's their job, like they get paid to do it. And honestly, they do get paid to do it. So, but it's really wild. There is, without any spoilers.
I love you guys so much. I love all the content you guys are doing. Going to your panel, so I'm super excited.
Oh yeah! Thank you so much.
Say hey and everything like that.
Thank you so much. We'll see you up there, man. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Hell yeah! Look forward to it.
Without giving away any spoilers, there is a like 11th hour Nat 20 from Allie Beardsley in season 1 that I had to improvise new elements of a cosmological reality.
Oh, gosh.
to, in other words, to say it was a world-shaking Nat 20 is actually understating it because multiple worlds were affected.
Cosmos level
Nat 20.
So how powerful did that make you feel?
Oh, so powerful. I'm hooked on this game. It's like gambling. It's like I went to Vegas and I'm like, I'm going to stay here. Dopamine was released. Yeah, it's just so fun to escape into fantasy, but it still carries the risk with it. Like, Brennan does an amazing job of making us feel like, I mean, I've honestly cried in both seasons, and real tears. Like, you're having people meet their fathers or, you know, like, family stuff that you just paint a picture that's so real. But it is fantasy, but it's still like, fuck, like the stakes are real.
Yeah. I think it's a truth about storytelling across media that fictionality isn't really a barrier to entry for most people to completely lose themselves in a world. You know, like the characters, whether mythological or literary or whatever, the characters that have impacted our lives are so real to us. And there's a great article about, you know, psychology that basically goes like, we don't store our memories of fiction in a different part of our brain than we store our real lived memories, which is alarming on one sense. Like, oh no, our brains are broken.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's very handy.
Something can hit you there.
Something can hit you in a real... Something being fictional, it doesn't get sorted into the fiction bin. It is real on an emotional level, even if it's not real in a material level.
And the show truly has all of that. It has emotional... Like, it has storytelling that's done in such a compelling way. And then it has, like, sheer fun. Sheer fantasy,
yes,
adventure. Like, yeah.
And playing with the 6 cast members we have, there aren't 6 people who are better suited to do what we try to do with the show, which is be a comedy show, like have laughter, like every episode is funny, and then do this incredible tap dance, sometimes moment to moment, of like very sincere, heartfelt storytelling intermingled with like the wildest stuff in the world. Like, we had that scene, again, try not to give any spoilers, but we have a scene between Siobhan's character and another NPC in the very final kind of climactic episode of this show, where the characters unveiling, people come up in a live show in Brooklyn and were like, that scene meant so much to me on a very real level, because you're talking about very real stuff. That scene also begins with a werewolf giving a blowjob. And so it's like, I hear what you're saying, but like, how, man, juggling that those two elements. So I mean, like, this cast, you couldn't do it with any other cast in the world. These 6 are like the best people in the world to play.
And I will say this, like, we got to watch a little bit of The Unsleeping City, and there's just like, I'm getting like full on belly laughs where like I cannot contain myself, especially when you first come in. I'm just like, oh my god,
yeah.
I can't stop laughing.
Brother.
you because, like, I know I love what you said about, like, the memories that we make with fiction, like, fictive characters or, you know, fiction moments kind of stay with us regardless because they don't get put into a different place. One of the things that I've really liked about Dimension 20 is that, like, when people think of D&D, they think of complete separation from the world. They think of something extremely high fantasy, out of everywhere. But what I really liked, especially watching, you know, the upcoming season and stuff, is getting to see something that is real.
Yeah.
And having the mythological elements moved in. Because, like, I love fantasy in all ways, but there's always been something about that type of fantasy. Do you think that that helps people connect to y'all's characters or helps you connect to your character or anything?
I think so in a big way. I mean, there's obviously other challenges that come with that. When you're having to honor a real place. So our second season, The Unsleeping City, is set in New York.
Yeah.
And you're trying to honor a real place that has real people in it and then add this mythological element that's fantastical. But I think the reason we love urban fantasy is, I'll say, a very kind of almost childish version of myself, which is that I think we all feel, we all catch ourselves feeling a lot of the time like there is magic in the world around corners. It's that part of you that does feel like platform 9 3/4 is out there somewhere. It does feel that way. And I think that living in New York, I felt like the city was magical every day I was there. But I think it's also very powerful in terms of, like, representation and in terms of connecting. Because I don't even feel like D&D should, in its most pure form, be escapist.
Yeah.
It is, there's a power fantasy and there's an element of fantasy in terms of, like, remembering what we're capable of. But I love when we connect our mythology and storytelling to actually what we are called upon to do heroically in real life.
Yeah.
And I think that everyone that plays D&D hopefully carries some heroic traits from their characters back into the world. And a lot of the second season is about, like, fantastical allegory for very real shit, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love, my favorite genre is definitely magical realism. So I know, like, season two was everything for me. having it be in New York City, grounded, but then everything was just so fucking poetic. Like, you can tell that you are, like, you can tell Brennan has, like, this background in philosophy, because every place that we went was kind of like, here's the battleground, but also, isn't this a metaphor for what we, you know, it's like, okay, Brennan, you're really making me think, you know, fucking, you know, I don't know, pizza rat or whatever. I mean, that's not one of the things, but you just pick a random New York thing and you'd be like, haha, on the surface, then be like, oh shit, yeah, I should canvas more for my local Democrats.
And if it takes a minotaur, you know, where making pizza for people to discover that, then that's great. You know, that makes sense.
After I tell you guys, Courtney decided to get you to sign my
clerk. Oh, sure.
Hello, how are you doing?
Morgan, Allie,
nice to meet you.
Hi, Morgan and Brian, nice to meet you. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers.
I'm so sorry, I did not want to be
here. No, that's okay.
Yeah. Well, we're doing a panel upstairs at G30.
Hell yeah, I'll be here. I came from Dallas. This is
Oh my god, that's awesome!
Hell yeah.
Do we have time for one more?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. No, so one of the other things that I wanted to ask too is you know, I'm kind of throwing it. I wrote questions. I've just been enjoying this conversation.
Uh-huh.
Ultimately, like, what are some of the influences that you have, like, when crafting the story and bringing, like, those philosophical elements? Because I know that, like, whether it was, like, from fiction or from your own personal studies or anything, like, what inspires you to kind of, like, create this magically real world? I mean, what inspires, you know, you as a character moving within that world?
Totally.
It's funny, Allie and I are actually both philosophy majors, and I think there's a lot of, like, it's this dual thing of, I love fantasy so much, and I think within Sleeping City, there's an element of, like, drawing on a lot of urban fantasy. I'm thinking specifically, like, you know, Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere, or, like, China Myville, like, you know, Perdido Street Station, or Unlondon, and New York is a place that I wanted to be like, no, there is a secret magical world underneath New York as well, which you do see, like, magical New York, but it's almost always in, like, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or
pushing,
like, action oriented. And this is, you know, what would be, like, the beating mythological heart? Because the thing is that in all fantasy relates to mythology. Like, all fantasy is born from mythology. And all mythology is born from humans and human cultures' attempts to understand the world. Like, we didn't make up dragons to fuck around. We made up dragons to attempt to describe the world as it was experienced, right? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, metaphor is not best understood as a lie. Metaphor is an attempt to actually reduce something to a more understandable symbol so you can get it more. Yeah. And I think to that degree, like, having the setting of, like, why bring the magic there, why bring the fantasy there, is because when you love fantasy just on its own, because it resonates with you a feeling of the numinous in day-to-day life, like the world is magical, then it's just a matter of, well, you can tell any fantasy story, so what kind of fantasy story do you want to tell? And I think that's, anytime I sit down to write something that is fantasy, I always want to go, like, well, already I'm winning. I'm going to have some dragons here? Great. I'm already having a ball. So we're doing great. And then it's like, well, okay, any story could be made into a fantasy story. So what kind of story do I want to tell? And it's almost like it's like the ship is sailing on this, like, sea of fantasy, but you're kind of guiding your chart by, like, philosophy and what matters to you. Like, what do I want to say with these metaphors that we all love?
Yeah, and I think having it be this magical realism world, I don't want to speak for everyone in the cast, but it does seem like each of us in season 2 decided to play an alternate reality version of ourselves, like maybe what could have been. I know I almost moved to New York multiple times and just never did, and I'm just kind of like, for this character, especially playing like a trans man, I was like, that's an interesting alternate reality, not too far away. It's definitely like where my interests lie, but it was a fun, like, Zach playing a firefighter. It's like, I could see Zach maybe pursuing that at some point. I think
it's so fun to see how all the characters in season 2 are so different from the characters in season 1, but because I know all the players, I see that they're just showing a different facet.
Yes.
Of themselves, which is really beautiful. And I love it. Season 1, I think, is a lot of personal allegories from people, too,
totally.
Of, like, resolving teenage coming-of-age issues. And it felt like the New York story was like, okay, we're not teenagers, so this is us as our, like, darker, grittier New York adult.
Yes.
Like, what if shit
and
hadn't
resolving
worked?
Resolving those. Yeah.
Like, what if shit hadn't worked out? What if I wasn't, yes, like, an improviser comedian working at College Humor? What if I was, like, an artsy drug dealer,
yes,
kind
totally.
Of deadbeat, like, in New York is,
and
like,
it was fun to, like, sky's the limit in that moment. Be like, who am I going to play? Okay, this dude. Okay, who sells drugs, and then we can, like, see. We can look at, like, consumption and what that does. And it was fun to be able to tie, like, even the mechanics of the character as a wild sorcerer into what it's like to suffer from mental disease to rely on street drugs.
And it was really interesting too to, like, to watch the D&D mechanics interact with very real shit. Because without any spoilers, Pete, Allie's character, is trans and is on hormones, but is also, like a lot of New Yorkers, like, a deeply insomniac and taking some other stuff for mental health. And then, like, there's a lot of, like, crazy stuff with, like, doing that and then being like, and this person's a wild magic sorcerer.
Yes. And this person has to roll to see if anything goes through and maybe tank the party with each of these fucking,
But yeah, so it's a total dream. It's awesome. There's, like, so much fun. Pete, so much fun. The other cast you guys will see in season 2, we can't wait to show you.
Every NPC. So good in this season.
Awesome. Well, thank you all so much. Real quick, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you guys?
My name is Brennan Lee Mulligan. You can find me on Twitter at BrennanLM. You can find me on Instagram at Brennan Lee Mulligan, all one word. And you can find Dimension 20 on dropout.tv.
Yeah, and I'm Allie Beardsley. I'm on Twitter as at AG Beardsley, and I'm on Instagram as at Allie Beardsley. And same, yeah. Check
awesome.
It out.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.